Welcome to another very special episode of Vanilla Weiss and the Nostalgic Nerds. And today we have with us a very special guest. We've got one returning guest and another guest of mine. I'm returning for a third show. We've got my buddy, musical composer Coley Dooley. Hi, Coley.
Hey there, Dan.
And with us, we got business owner, South Florida entertainment business owner, my man Darren Perlmutter. Hey, Darren.
Hello, Dan. How's it going, guys?
Good. And we've got a very special treat for you today. Today we will be interviewing my man, the great 90s legend, David Martell, who y'all may remember as Big Pete's best friend, Teddy, in The Adventures of Pete and Pete. So, Teddy, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
Hi there, Dan. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure's all mine. So, yeah, do you still keep in touch with some of your co-stars?
Yeah, that's always a question I get. And yeah, I do. I'm in some form of touch with most of the folks who I knew and really got to know during the course of the show, which is great. It's a great extended family to be part of.
You still in touch with with Michael Morano, is that his name, and Danny Tamborelli?
Yeah, we had a benefit for the Forget Out the Vote a few years back, and I produced it and was also on the panel, and brought the whole cast together for that, which was really nice. I keep in touch with folks on the creative team behind the scenes as well, but it's a really nice good group of people. So I do keep in touch with the good majority of them.
When people see you on the street, when fans walk by you, do they still recognize you? Do they come up to you and say anything?
It happens sometimes, and that's always nice, but it certainly happens less as the years go by.
Yeah.
And also whether or not I'm clean shaven or wearing some beard or scruff or something, but it is always nice when people remember the show.
Yeah, well, I think that's in terms of not as many recognizing, that just has to do with being a child star, because of course we end up looking a lot different once we become adults than we do as children. So
sure.
Yeah. And
I don't know, Dan. I bet you still have the same Shane upon him you did growing up.
Yeah, Darren would know. That's a Jewish term, by the way. Darren's Jewish, like myself.
I've heard it before. I've heard that Yiddish term before, yes.
Yeah. So do you do a lot of conventions? Do you do a lot of meet and greet events?
I haven't in the past. I've done some, but there are a lot. And I have friends who do those. Some of them are it's unknown who's going to be attending, and there are just so many of these conventions, but they're a great way for the sort of the memories of the shows to stay alive. I think they're great.
Yeah, and that was that show was so ahead of its time too. Like, that show by today's standards would almost be more of like a stoner show than a kid show.
Perhaps. The writing was just phenomenal. I think sort of like like The Simpsons. You know, it's written in a way that is appealing to a wide range of ages. You know, I would say that, though, like, about a lot of the 90s kind of shows, I mean, from sitcoms to kid shows, they were, you know, family friendly. Like, you know, I mean, it had a little bit for everybody. I think leading up into the 90s as well, I think probably in the 80s there were shows.
Yeah,
like that. Yeah, but maybe like more Cheers. So in the 90s. Maybe the 90s had more of a some more smarts to their kids' shows.
Yeah. And the 90s in particular, you know, leaned more and alternative rock, alternative lifestyle, you know, exploring how far we can push our cultural bounds. And I, for one, I'm a Pete and Pete fanatic.
Nice.
Pete and Pete had, I know this isn't the first time you've heard this either. Hipsters wouldn't exist without Pete and Pete. punk rock wouldn't exist as it did in the 90s without Pete and Pete. A lot of kids wouldn't know who Iggy Pop was without Pete and Pete. Like, it's Michael Stipe.
I wouldn't know who he was without Pete and Pete. I can tell you that. Yeah.
Yeah. Darren's actually got a tattoo of Petunia.
Wow.
Yes, I do. I'm one of those
you're
guys.
Definitely a committed guy. That's it. You know. Yeah, that's cool. Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, I know. Oh, what other shows showed it?
That's cool.
Well, I mean, have you come across other folks with Petunia tattoos at conventions or otherwise?
I think I've come across one other person with a Petunia tattoo. He was a bartender at one of the dive bars I frequent.
Wow.
But that's about it.
Cool. Yeah, no, that's, you know.
The people who were touched by it were really, really deeply touched by it. Like, my personal reasoning is that, and you in particular had a huge amount to do with this, is, you know, as somebody who's pretty damn neurodivergent and by authority, like, just seeing how adults were posed as
sorry, I think you're cutting out a little bit.
Yeah, you're cutting out a bit. What did you say?
I love how Pete exacerbated that, and you in particular. You know, season 3 rolled around, and Teddy was introduced, and suddenly, like, kids who knew they were weird but, you know, didn't know why they were weird had somebody to identify with, and ultimately Teddy was accepted and loved, and it gave us a lot of comfort as we
That's
kids.
Really, really thoughtful and kind, and thank you. I really appreciate that. And I'm glad, you know, glad to have had a part in that, you know, in what you're describing and in the show. And it's great. It's really nice.
But yeah, and I agree, and Teddy was probably the one I could most identify with as a little kid, because I too was one of those, like, really offbeat nerdy kids, but who was also a really loyal friend, and so I identified with Teddy more than probably any other character.
that's cool. I think I found qualities in myself that I just super exaggerated for that character. But, you know, I got to give credit to the writers again, because they just did a phenomenal job with that character.
But yeah,
they write the character mostly, you know, to create this thing, or was it based a lot on your personality? Like, did they kind of assess you and then write based on that?
It's interesting, you know, because I always have that same question about other, about characters that I've watched on TV. And but I've also been asked that question before. And, to me, I feel if you've been on a series, there's sort of a line that gets blurred. If you've been on a series for some period of time, especially if you're a young actor, they're going to write towards, towards you. So, like, the character is going to start in one way, but then it's inevitably going to connect with some of your own, if you're on a series for a number of years, with your own kind of personality quirk. So I think it's sort of a combination of things to answer your question.
Personality, but also, like, a lot of the characters in it, they truly, like, looked the part. They didn't even need makeup or anything to look the part of their character's personality. Like, I forget
It was great casting. They did a great job casting.
Like, I forget the actor's name, but the one who played Endless Mike, his natural look was absolutely perfect for that part. He naturally, I'm not trying to, like, insult him or anything, but has that sort of, like, almost creepy serial killer look to him.
His name's Rick Gomez. Rick Gomez, fantastic actor and really nice guy.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I feel like so many actors who play the really mean roles are usually the nicest people behind the scenes.
Hey, Dan, I'll give you a quote from this guy who played is a guy I don't know if and none of y'all seen Mortal Kombat. Yeah, the movie Mortal Kombat. He played Shang Tsung, and if you're an 80s person, in Showdown Little Tokyo, he was in that. His name is Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa, or Kerry Tagawa. And he said he loved playing the bad guy because it's an important part. And he gets to just, be something totally different. But it's an important part, he said.
Yeah, before you were actually on Nickelodeon, I assume you grew up mostly in the 80s. Did you watch any 80s Nickelodeon? Like, you can't do that on television and all that?
I remember seeing You Can't Do It on Television. I may have been a little bit young to really dig into that. We didn't have, I don't think we had cable. We didn't until I was like 12 or 13. I like the Mickey Mouse Club a lot. I watched that regularly, I remember. And what else? And then, Saved by the Bell, right? Who didn't watch that?
That's literally one of my all-time favorite shows.
I loved that show when I was a kid. And what other kid shows?
There were like six of them total, so how could we not all watch the same shows?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right. I mean, those are the big ones, I think.
What about
Saved by the Bell?
Yeah.
I mean, I had other shows that I watched, when I was young, but in terms of, like, those kids, type shows, those were the ones that I watched.
If Saved by the Bell, I'm sure Tiffany Amber Thiessen's the one who made most of us guys realize what our orientation was at a young age.
she was beautiful. I mean, I'm sure she still is.
But in terms of syndication, it was sort of confusing because as a little kid, I didn't know that the show hadn't officially become a series till like 93. I didn't know that the few episodes before that were all just like specials. And
I think that basically they did a number of specials and short like promos for Nickelodeon.
Yep.
All of which established the characters. And then Nickelodeon ordered a series, And that's when I came in for the first episode of the series. And then I did bits on a variety of episodes over the first season and the second season, and then the character just kind of grew from there.
And you've done a bunch of other projects too, right? What are some of the other projects when fans think of you that they normally identify you with, would you say?
Well, I think it's mostly The Adventures of Pete and Pete, because I stepped sort of behind the camera following that show to go to college, and I didn't major in theater. I went the communication and media route and then worked in the industry for a while. I did a few other shows sort of like, I guess, during and after college. I did a show, I narrated a series on the Discovery Channel for a few years, which is also a great experience. It's called Jaws and Claws, and some people actually remember it, which is amazing to me, but it was part of like the Discovery Kids block of programming, and then I guess it was in the late 90s. It went into the early 2000s a little bit. Some episodes of some other shows, but I think people mostly, if I'm fortunate that people remember me, if they do remember me at all, it's from PTV.
Yeah, well, I think that's the downside when you play a role so well, is that then, no matter how good of an actor you are, it automatically like makes you typecasted, because then people, no matter what else they see you in, they can only see you as that part. Like, for me, even a legendary actor like Anthony Hopkins, doesn't matter what other movies I see him in, all I see is Hannibal Lecter when I see him.
I see that.
Yeah, or Emilio Estevez. I grew up with the Mighty Ducks movies, and even when I watch like The Breakfast Club, Young Guns, or anything like that, all I can see is the coach of the Mighty Ducks.
Okay, sure. Yeah, no, you connect with a certain sort of image and character, and sometimes it is hard, I guess, to move away from that. Some actors do it very successfully.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, at least Pete and Pete was one of those shows that lasted quite a few seasons, because I remember that was a thing with some other shows on 90s Nickelodeon where they were great shows, but they would only last like one season and maybe two seasons. But Pete and Pete lasted like, what, four seasons?
Yeah. I mean, if you count the specials, but I think it was about, they did really three traditional seasons. It's, you know, most shows, it's hard to even get a show on the air. So having three seasons is certainly something, for sure.
And what I always found ironic with the show is that Artie left the season right before they introduced Pit Stain, and I'm like, that to me, that was funny, because the character of Artie would have come in so handy against Pit Stain the next season.
Both memorable characters. I don't. You remember better than I do about all, you know, who came and went when.
Yeah, I know that's something about me is I have an extremely photographic memory. I can remember like all those little details. It's funny, like I was telling you, I'm good friends with Danny Cooksey from Salute Your Shorts, and what's it called, I remember a lot more about the show than he does.
Interesting. Yeah,
Well, you think about it this way, because that's interesting, Dan. Think about it this way, though. You're someone watching it. He's someone living it. So if you think about it, you're watching all his actions and the character and what he's doing, but he's first person doing it, not necessarily
watching
you know,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Watching it, that's true. And probably not, and he's definitely probably not watching it, you know, these days. Yeah.
So I'm guessing you don't get nostalgic and flip it on every now and then to be reminded of the good old times that you probably barely remember because it was a million years ago.
You know, I've actually watched some of the ones that I'm not in more in more recent times because those are the ones that I'm, I guess, inevitably less familiar with. So once in a while, I'll put on an episode just to remember. Yeah,
that's cool.
And I like how, like, a lot of 90s kids TV and 80s kids TV, they got away with quite a few more adult themes that would never be allowed nowadays. Like, I was thinking about the wrestling episode of Pete and Pete. Nowadays, they would never allow on a kid show a guy pulling out a wrench and yanking out his tooth and... Or murder.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. It probably, probably not in the way that they did back in the 90s. Yeah, you're probably right about that.
That was probably one of the darker episodes. Endless Mike literally murders three people in that episode.
I didn't even realize that. Wow. Okay.
Was it episode one? They were talking about burying a dead squid in the 50-yard line.
They did.
That was actually the pilot episode.
Ah, okay. I wasn't too far off.
Yeah.
Yeah, with that, you have PETA all over you nowadays.
Yeah, exactly.
They're going to be all over us just from you mentioning them. Thanks a lot.
So, are you still acting? Do you still do any, or do you do any behind-the-scenes stuff still?
Yeah, you know, once in a while, I'll work on a project. I haven't recently been actively pursuing acting. I teach a acting class, and I enjoy that. And I also am on the production end, working in development on a number of projects, which if you ask me in, I don't know, maybe 6 months to 9 months, maybe I'll have some news to share. But, I enjoy the industry and, it's a part of, it's a the industry is a part of my youth, even though it was really the East Coast Hollywood that I kind of grew up in, and now I'm in the West Coast Hollywood.
Yeah, I know there's a big controversy with Nickelodeon now because of that new series that came out, but yeah, I feel like that's far from just Nickelodeon. I feel like that's most kiddie networks, including like Disney, but we just haven't found out about it yet. I feel like with so many networks like that, similar corruption goes on behind the scenes, but unfortunately some get discovered sooner than others. But
yeah, order, go ahead. Yeah, the things in that doc, I can't speak to it because I wasn't in that world that was discussed, that immediate world that was discussed. But the things that are covered are certainly very unfortunate and upsetting things that are mentioned.
Yeah, And people who are aspiring stars but have never been in the industry, really, they don't realize how grimy a business showbiz often is. Like, everybody who's an aspiring actor, an aspiring star, they only think of the glamorous side. They think of the American dream. But, once you get into Hollywood, you realize that there's so much, like, corruption that goes on behind the scenes and stuff.
Well, I mean, I think, look, it's a unique kind of business. All businesses can have their corruption, but it's a very challenging business, and it, especially for young people, and I'm just talking in general, some of the pressures can just, I think, be unhealthy for younger people. But it's a tough business,
Did you find yourself under that sort of pressure at any point?
What sort of pressure? I think just general pressures of the business. Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a popularity contest in some way. So, but I think the pressures that kids face today, even outside of Hollywood, are just so challenging with Instagram and all the likes and this and that. And, I think that's bad.
When back when the 90s, when the show was going on, did fans used to come up to you a lot and instantly recognize you?
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty common when the show was on or in repeats for folks to come up to me. And I mean, and I, kids especially, or people my age, and that was nice. I also, I think, wanted, especially like in college when the show was still airing, because I started college pretty much right after the show. I think I wanted a little bit of normalcy. So I certainly didn't talk about it unless I was asked, as you can imagine.
Was that tough? Was that challenging? Like, being able to go to public places and not be bothered?
I wasn't bothered. I don't recall ever being really bothered. I think it was more about you don't get to be just, in certain circumstances, you don't just get to be normal and to have that experience, right? So it can feel, you don't have any control of, who's going to recognize you or who isn't. And it's always nice to be recognized, but it's, I don't know if sacrifice is the word, because I wouldn't have had it any other way. I really enjoyed, being part of that. But there's a trade-off, and like most things in life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a question.
I just have to hit stop recording real quick, because they only let me record in half hour increments.
Actors. Because I think
we're back. So Cooley, you had a question. What was your question?
Oh, I was gonna say, I know this is a big thing with trial that had good actors, and I think this is where you were going with this, is that you didn't get the quote unquote normal life. Because I know people like, to pull out other names, the more contemporary, Daniel Radcliffe and all of them, Rupert Grant,
those guys are in a whole other ball game in terms of what, I mean, because they're everybody recognizes them in theory, right?
Yeah, especially Macaulay. Especially Macaulay Culkin back in the day.
When he was younger. Yeah, when he was younger, sure.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, let me just say real quick, what I think I'm saying is that they grew up on those shows. That was their childhood. They grew up together as those characters on the TV set.
Yeah.
So they really, that was their childhood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like, what's it called? The cast of Saved by the Bell, I think in one interview, they were talking about how it was weird for them because they, in real life, because those days were their high school days. Their high school days consisted of playing high school students rather than being high school students.
Yeah.
Sure, they had tutoring in trailers, probably, or in an office, you know, off the soundstage. Just like we did on our show, but you know, they were on for many years, and yeah, I think there's definitely some overlap and some differences for sure.
Yeah. So do you ever do Comic-Con? Do you ever come down to Florida to do like Comic-Con or anything?
If I get invited, I'll definitely go. I haven't done Comic-Con in Florida before.
Yeah, they usually.
But it sounds fun.
Yeah, it is. They usually draw in a pretty good crowd down here at the Florida SuperCon in Miami.
I will secure you an invite. I will make it happen.
Sounds like a plan.
Danny Tamborelli comes down to do shows here fairly often, like every couple of years.
Yeah, I know that he and Mike do a lot of stuff together. They do a lot of appearances, which seems like a lot of fun.
Yeah, one of my mom's friends' daughters, who grew up in New York City. She said that Michael was one of her classmates in quite a few classes, that he would be in her classes and she'd see him all the time at like the subway.
He's from New York originally.
Yeah, I know he's a big Knicks fan, right? I think he's a big Knicks fan.
Possibly, I don't recall, honestly.
Yeah. He's one you're still in touch with, right?
I mean, we don't talk every day. We don't talk every day, every week, but I'm in touch with the majority of folks from the show, yeah.
Yeah, what about Toby Huss? I know Toby Huss is still doing some projects.
I know he does a lot of work. He's a phenomenal actor.
Yeah, he was in the 2018 Halloween movie. He played Jamie Lee Curtis's son-in-law in that movie.
Yeah, I've seen him in a lot of different things over the years.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, somebody told me he actually did stand-up comedy for a little while, and he was, like, super filthy.
I think he does a Frank Sinatra impression. In fact, I don't know if he's still doing that, but he used to.
I heard his comedy was very dirty. It's funny how some of these people we grew up with who were squeaky clean on TV, and then they tried stand-up comedy and they were as dirty as could be, like Toby Huss, Bob Saget, Dustin Diamond, God rest his soul, was a very dirty comedian.
Yeah, it's interesting when you see those kind of contrasts, right?
Yeah. Who were some of your idols growing up? Like, who were some of the people that inspired you to want to get into acting?
Well, you know, when I was a kid watching shows like Saved by the Bell, really were intriguing because I was like, wow, these, I was an only child, or am an only child rather, though I have a stepbrother now. But growing up, you know, I was like, wow, that would be really cool to be around all these peers working professionally and creating stuff. You know, and of course, the idea of Hollywood is exciting. And so I think that interest inspired me. I also had a lot of kind of video equipment and cameras around because my dad does work that uses them. It's not about acting. It's in the communication space. So we had some video equipment around. So I would just make videos and edit them. And I think it actually helped me kind of in retrospect. It definitely helped me learn how to act a little bit because when you can edit, you can see kind of what's working and what isn't in your performance. So I was just messing around, I think, with all that and watching Saved by the Bell. And I was like, you know, this would be fun. And I took some acting classes for a while in the Philadelphia area and got a manager and started auditioning and then, you know, landed on Pete and Pete. But yeah, I think my influences or, you know, inspiration was kind of a combination of things.
Yeah, you grew up right around me. I grew up in Lower Merion Township, and you said you're from Bryn Mawr. Did you actually go to high school there?
I did alternative schooling for high school, but I sort of did a combination of things. But I went to Radnor High School for a bit, and when I was, when I was in middle school, I was in the Radnor Middle School system, and then I kind of did a combination of public and private school throughout school.
Yeah, Radnor was our biggest football rivals.
I remember there was that rivalry between the two.
Yeah, Lower Merion and Radnor, when it came to football, they hated each other.
Mm. But of course, the great Kobe is from Lower Merion.
Yeah, and when I was in high school, pretty much all throughout my 4 years, our football team absolutely sucked. So it was inevitable that Radnor was going to beat us all 4 years of my high school.
Well, yeah. It's a great part of town to grow up in, or great part of the world, I guess you could say, to grow up in.
Yeah, the suburbs are beautiful there, and the school systems are really top notch. It's a great region to raise kids.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
And what age?
Maybe one day I'll be back. I'll be back. Who knows?
At what age did you realize you wanted to be an actor?
I started taking classes when I was 13-ish. So I think that was when.
And with Pete and Pete, did you just go in and audition, or did like a scout?
No, I had an agent set up a manager and an agent who set up the audition, and then I had to go through a process. There was an audition, there was a callback, there may have been one or two callbacks, I don't remember. Go ahead.
Were there a lot of people at the audition who looked like you? Because I heard...
I don't remember, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I heard they say that the best way to find out how many doppelgangers there are of you in this world is to audition for a role like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they were looking for, I think that I was fortunate to kind of give them a take on the script that they liked. I don't think they were looking for, you know, somebody that necessarily looked like me initially. All roles are different, right? You know, sometimes they're looking for a look and sometimes they don't but I think typically they don't know what they're looking for until they find it. I think that's more typical, actually.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm glad you landed the role. I honestly, I couldn't see anybody else in that role. You really perfected the role of Teddy.
Well, thank you so much.
I don't know. I could have done it too. Method acting, you know.
But yeah, Darren owns a business in downtown Hollywood where once a month we do a comedy show there that I host, and we have a concept that's like the Apollo in New York called Cake or Death, where if the audience likes you, they vote cake and you get a piece of cake. But if they vote death, then somebody dresses a Grim Reaper, escorts you off stage.
That's funny. That's really funny. I like that.
Yeah.
That's really, really clever. Yeah.
Trying to do something different, you know?
Yeah, I like that. I like that. It's a good title, too, for a show, Cake or Death.
I'm glad you appreciate it and probably recognize the source. It's some good stuff.
And I like it.
When I was in high school, my dream was actually to be a Hollywood screenwriter director, but not until I tried it did I realize just how incredibly hard just writing a screenplay alone is. Every single page you have to include like a billion details, and yeah, you have to literally include every single detail of what the scene looks like, what the camera angles are and everything. And I'm just like, wow, I had no idea that it was that much of a challenge.
Yeah. It is a unique talent. That goes without saying, yeah.
Yeah, I really envy those who have capacity to be able to be that detailed with their writing, the ones who are able to multitask in their mind like that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So yeah, before we wrap up, do you have like any fan pages or anything for your fans to still interact with you?
You can connect with me on Instagram, David J. Martel. I'm not highly active on Instagram, but I try to respond to anybody who writes.
Is there anywhere else where we can find any like upcoming projects of yours?
I don't have a sort of a posting site like that, I hope you'll be able to read about them in the future. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Well, fans, anybody tuning in, you've heard it from here. This has been another very special episode of Vanilla Weiss and the Nostalgic Nerds. And David, it was such a pleasure having you on. Because you're definitely one of the ones I grew up with. I'm 39, and the 90s was truly my childhood.
Thank you so much for having me, Dan and guys, it's been a real, real pleasure. So I appreciate you having me.
Awesome chatting with you.
Yeah, man. Indeed. Lifelong
dream come true.
The pleasure was all ours, and we wish you the absolute best with all of your upcoming projects, and we hope to be able to see them when they're done.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. This concludes another very special episode of Vanilla Weiss and the Nostalgic Nerds. We shall see y'all next episode. Good night.